We're doing Mishlei, chapter 19. Proverbs, Perek Yutes, the 19th chapter, Pasuk Aleph. Tov Rash Olech Betumo. Better a pauper, someone who's poor, but at least the way he goes is a way of solemnness. Meikesh Sfatav Hu Chasil. Rather than someone who, this person, he might be poor, but at least he's honest, he's a tam, the first person. But the second person, he's better than a person who swindles people, and ultimately he's going to be considered a fool. People who try to trick other people, they think they're smart. But when they're caught, then everyone recognizes that they're a fool. So better a person be poor, but at least everyone knows you can trust him, he's an honest guy, than a person who tries to trick you, and ultimately he's the fool in his own eyes. Things catch up to you. I was once in a store, and the worker was trying to sell me something. So I asked him, do you make something off of this? Because like, he spent a lot of time helping me, and I was contemplating buying it there or not. So I asked him, do you make a percentage? So he said to me, no. So I said, then why are you working so hard to get the sale? So he said, what do you mean? If the store succeeds, then it's in my interest too. I work here, right? So I want the store to succeed as a store. So he was honest. He was trying to be helpful to me and helpful to his boss. And sometimes you go to a store and people are trying to sell you something, and you see they're trying to fool you. And when you see that, then they end up being fools in the buyer's eyes. When we try to trick someone, we always risk the fool of getting caught, and then v'hu chasil, and then we look like fools.
I'm sorry, where are
we? 19th chapter of Mishlei, Proverbs, the second verse. Gam belodat nefesh lo tov. This verse, like all verses in Mishlei, has multiple understandings. The simple understanding is that even when a person sins, gam belodat, even when a person doesn't know, but he erred, he sinned, nefesh lo tov, it's really not good for him. We say lo yune la tzadik kol aven. If a person is righteous, then God doesn't let him err and sin. If it happened that a person did, so then he has to recognize that it's telling him something. That's beraglaim chote. And a person who's rushing wherever he wants and he doesn't notice, hey, wait a second, does it make sense? Is something, is this a proper place? Is this a place I should be running to? So ultimately he's held accountable for that. We have to think before we run. A person shouldn't be running and then saying, ah, it'll work out. People sometimes go to a place, they don't check the heksher. Then when they get there, they say, wait a second, but I'm here, what am I going to eat? So yeah, who said we should run here? Maybe we should check the heksher before we go. We run to a place, we don't check that they have a minion there. No, so maybe we should have checked. The atzber gnaim, if a person runs, that's also called chote. A person can't say, well, now I'm here, I ran here, now I got here, now I'm stuck. A person should check before he runs. So that's a simple understanding in the verse. Another understanding is, gam belodat nefesh, even when a person doesn't know Torah, lo tov, that's not good for him. People sometimes say, so I don't know, what's so terrible? No. We're supposed to know. And if we don't know, then that's considered like we're in a state that's not good. That's beraglaim chote. And a sinner tramples things with his feet. He says, what's the big deal, you know? When people don't learn Torah, so nothing's a big deal. If we don't learn, so, you know, okay. So I ate in a restaurant that I asked her, what could be so terrible? So if you learn, then you know there are 1,000 things that could be so terrible. It could be bugs in the lettuce. There could be seasoning that isn't kosher. It could be 100 things. When you don't learn, you say, no, what's so terrible? So that's the second understanding in the verse. And our sages said that there's a deeper understanding to the verse. Gam belodat, even when the other side isn't consenting, so nefesh, the communion between a husband and his wife, lo tov, that's not good. The connection between a husband and his wife is referred to as like a nefesh. The person's connecting with himself. And sometimes a person feels like, well, she's my wife, I could be intimate with her whenever I want. And our sages said, no. If she's not consenting, if she doesn't want it, that's also called lo tov. When a person is single, how does the Torah refer to it? As lo tov eyot adam nevado. It's not good that a person's alone. When a person feels like he could force intimacy upon his wife, he's really alone. There isn't any intimacy there. He's forcing a situation which she doesn't want. Our sages said is when the wife is consenting, but she consents once, and he wants more than once, so that's like a person trampling someone else, and that's called a sinner. So it's interesting when we note that our sages lived in a time when a wife was considered the possession of her husband. All society treated a wife like the possession of her husband. 400 years ago, you don't have to go as far back as 2,000 years ago, but 400 years ago, the Puritans considered a wife the possession of her husband. In the United States, a woman couldn't own land until not so long ago. So everything was her husband's. She was his property. And here we see Shlomo HaMelech is talking about this about 3,000 years ago. Chazal spoke about it 2,000 years ago. Judaism always had the attitude that we have to respect and honor the wife. So in this verse, Chazal said that's one of the things Shlomo HaMelech was referring to. Ivelet Adam Tesalef Darko. A person's own foolishness causes him to get stuck. And when he gets stuck, he blames God. Like Yosef's brothers. They sold him to Egypt. They caused themselves to have all the problems. Now they come to Egypt. And this king is making them all the problems. And when they get stuck at the hotel, and suddenly they find that, hey, our money's back in our sacks. Now this Egyptian ruler is going to come to us with claims that we stole the food and we never paid. They start saying, what's God doing to us? They did it to themselves. They caused this situation. But when things go bad, we tend to blame God. Hon Yosef Reim Rabim. The tendency is that wealth makes one have a lot of friends. Vedal Mereu Yipared. And a pauper, even his friends maintain a distance from him because they know he's always needy. He's always in need of something. So this is obvious. Told you guys, I had a friend who was a millionaire. He isn't anymore. But when he was a millionaire, he once offered to help me out financially. So I told him, no, I'll work it out otherwise, but I don't want any help from you. So he said, what's your insistence? You know, it makes no difference for me. I got millions in the bank. It's a few thousand dollars. It makes zero difference to me. I told him, look, we were friends before I knew you had a penny. Later on, I discovered you had money. But before I knew you had a penny, we were friends. And you knew I was your friend because I didn't know you were a millionaire. Today, I know you're a millionaire. I want to try at least to maintain the relationship like I didn't know you had a penny. So that you'll know that somewhere in the world there's one guy who's really your friend. Because everyone else you can't know. Once you have money, you can't know who's your friend. Everyone, like the Bas says, Hon Yosef Reim Rabim. Once you have wealth, that causes you to have a lot of friends. Everyone's going to be nice to you because everyone hopes to get a favor. But when a person's poor, so then everyone leaves him. And this guy too, he lost all his money. I don't know if there's any left now. I don't know if he's in the poorhouse yet, but he's not far from it. And suddenly he doesn't have so many friends. It's like, it's very sad. It's sad, it's unfortunate, that's the way the world works.
In Pirkei Avot, it says, who is wealthy? One who is happy with his lot. Is that what Shlomo HaMelech means?
I don't think so. I think that if we want to understand that way, there is an element of truth to that. If you walk around and you're happy-go-lucky, then people will have a tendency to feel more comfortable being your friend. That could be. I don't think that's what he's referring to, but if you want, we can understand it that way too. But it doesn't say osher. It says hon. Hon literally means wealth. Eid shekarim lo yinake. A person who testifies falsely won't come clean of it. V'yafich kezavim lo yimaleit. And when a person allows himself, even not in testimony, to let lies spill from him, then ultimately he'll get punished. He won't be able to escape punishment. Very often we think one lie, two lies, we could get away with it. One of the things that's interesting is, I don't know if you guys follow politics here in Israel, I don't follow so much, but I have people who inform me of what's going on. Like here in Israel, if you visit by Israelis, it's almost impossible that it doesn't come up in the meal. So whenever it comes up, I say, wait a second, fill me in. I don't know what you guys are talking about. So then I get an update. So it's interesting, in the last 2 years, ever since the Jews were chased out of Gush Katif, so almost every person that was involved there has been axed. The only one left is Olmert, I think. Almost everyone, head of the army, the Ramatkal, each one after another, they're being axed, and not for the act of kicking the people out of Gush Katif. Each one was caught in his own lies, one after another. I mean, I don't want to say names. But why say names? Doesn't matter. We're being taped. They even, it was so obvious that there was a newspaper article a few months ago that the headlines of Bathsheba showed name after name with an X, one after another, showing how they're falling. And the truth is, that's what the pasuk's telling us. You can lie and get away with it only so far. When a person lies, so he doesn't notice it, he lies again and again and again, and eventually he can't get away with it. At some point, it catches up with the person. It's known Mark Twain's line. It's much simpler to tell the truth, that way you don't have to remember what you said. Rabbin yechalu p'nei nadiv, v'chol hara li'ish matan. Many people try to get close to a person who's a philanthropist, and everyone's buddy-buddy when once a person shows he's willing to be a giving person. So again, that's a similar concept to what we saw two psukim earlier. There's a guy who Bronfman, the one who started Birthright. So if you ever try to get a donation from him, his secretary has the following rule. You can meet with him and not get a penny. I'm telling you, if you meet with him, the deal's like this. If you meet with him, you don't get a penny. If you don't meet with him, you get $200. Which do you want? That's the deal. If you call off to get an appointment with Bronfman for your organization, that's the answer the secretary gets. Standard. Why? Because everyone's going to try to access a person when he's a philanthropist. Many people try to access a philanthropist. I once spoke to a guy trying to get him to donate to a certain organization. And he said to me, you know, on an average day, I have 100 people trying to get a donation out of me. On an average day, there are 100 people knocking on the door. So it's difficult. Kol achirash sineyuhu. Okay, one second. Before we go on to the next pasuk, our sages said that this pasuk could be understood about those who give tzedakah, and this pasuk could be understood about those who teach Torah. Once you have what to give, people see that they can ask you questions, and you know Torah, so everyone's going to try to come to you and ask you. It's known that a lot of rabbis look for a base medrash where no one knows them. But they could go learn, no one's going to come and ask them questions, because at some point, you want to get learning done, you got to be in a place where people don't know you. Kolachei rash sineyuhu, even the close people who are brothers to the pauper, they hate him. They... And certainly, the people who are more distant, his friends, his neighbors, they distance themselves from him. Meradef amarim lo heima. And if he wants to say, oh, so and so is my friend, so and so knows me, it's not so. Can't count on them. And this is the way of the world. When a person is successful, so he has a lot of friends. Donald Trump said that at one point he was in serious debt, and suddenly no one knew him. When everything went down, he was divorcing his wife, and the real estate went down, suddenly no one knew him. He was lucky that there was one bank, Citibank, that agreed to back him, that they said they'll have patience. He told them that the market will come back, and thanks to them, he's not a pauper. He said one time it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and the Chinese owners of Citibank got nervous, and they called him down to a meeting, and he was in such a bad state that he didn't have the money to get a cab. And he walked down from his building, it was a New York wintry night, he walked down from his building to the bank to meet with these Chinese businessmen, the heads of Citibank. And he explained to them the situation, and thanks to them, thanks to the fact that they were willing to be patient and not collect their debts, and not tell them, okay, sell the buildings, pay up. He didn't go bankrupt. So once a person's poor, he's in danger that people don't really like a person who's poor. Now, obviously, this isn't the way we're supposed to behave, but it is the way most of the world behaves. Now, again, our sages said that this can be understood on the simple level. It could also be understood on the level of Torah and good deeds. When a person's poor, when people see he doesn't know Torah and he's not a kind person, so people then aren't interested in being buddy-buddy with him. And when a person tries to give halachic ruling and he really doesn't know what he's talking about, so ultimately people also recognize that. Chazal say that this pasuk is referring to Yosef, that he'd come to his father and tell him all kinds of bad things about his brothers, and that's why they hated him. He said things about them that weren't true, and that's why he was called a rash. He was a pauper. And his brothers, everything he said about them ultimately came back against him, right? He said they're going with women improperly, so a woman tried to go improperly with him. He said, each line that he said, Chazal, show how it came back to haunt him. He said they're eating Eivar Minachai, and Chazal said that even at a time, the Pasuk therefore shows that even at a time when they were trying to dip his cloak in blood, they shechted the animal. The Pasuk testifies they didn't, even when they weren't going to eat that animal, they did proper shechita. He said they were disgracing their brothers who were from the Shvachot, so he was sold as a servant. He said they were looking at the girls of the land, so God said, I'll send a girl to start up with you. Everything was paid back for what he did improperly. Yeah.
Sorry, Yosef,
yeah.
So I remember when we were going to Parsha and we were on our chronic material. I made a point of talking to some people here, but it seems that from the shot that when Yosef was like thinking only about himself, he had been going down. And then when he starts with other people, he's at that point, when he starts asking the father if they go down, that's the point where he starts everyone pretty much rejected that because they had gone to Rav Lisman's shir the day before, and they said they proved from the Midrash that Yosef really didn't do anything wrong at all. And
I want to think about it. It's a very nice thought. I have to think about it. There are many Midrashim. They were saying in line with one Midrash, and maybe what you're saying fits very well with another Midrash. I have to think. We see that in Potiphar's, we could say it. We could say it all along that. Even in Potiphar's house, his success was when he was taking care of Potiphar's stuff. It's a nice thought. It's a very nice thought. I would write it down. It's a very nice thought. Pasuk Ches. Kone lev ohev nafsho, shomer tvuna limtzo tov. The pasuk tells us that one who acquires a heart. So we all have a heart, but in Mishlei, the heart is like the mind. Different Sfarim refer to the thought process as taking place in different parts of the body. So the Mekubalim discuss that different thoughts really take place in different parts of the body, and that the neshama is divided between three parts of the body, between the heart and the head and somewhere inside. I don't remember if it's klayot, if it's the kidneys, or the liver, right? Somewhere there.
Either Melech, if the head comes first,
Lemech,
if the heart comes first, and Klum, if the...
Does the
Klayot
come first? Okay.
I remember
that. Yeah. So, if you want, the Re'ibin Shu'ib, I think, in last week's parasha expands on it. So, if one acquires Das, Konele, if one acquires a heart, that means he acquires understanding what's going on in this world. Ohev Nafsho, so he loves his soul. He's looking to find out what's the proper way to live in this world. Shomer tvuna limtzot tov, and he ensures to watch the understanding in order to find good in this world. It's interesting that we're all looking for good. We spend our lives looking for good, and the question is, what's the good that we're going to look for, and what we're going to find in that? Bilam was also looking for good. He just thought the good was something else. I think part of it is what path we go on. What good are we looking for? Chazal said, to be married is called good. To connect with Hashem is called good. The Beis HaMikdash is called good. All these things are called tov. Tov? Ed shkarim lo yinake. A prophet who testifies falsely won't come clean. V'yafech kzavim yoved. One who spills forth lies will be wiped out. So we have to ask ourselves, what's the density in this verse and the verse we read four verses ago? They seem to be almost identical. Lo navel, huh?
You said Bilam tried to do good. Yeah?
Bilam wanted good, a different type of good, yeah.
What's the different type of good?
He wanted physical good. He wanted wealth. He wanted honor. He wanted fame. Bilam's whole discussion with God was, even if you don't respect me, even if you're in your eyes I'm not worth much, kings in this world really value me, I'm worth a lot. His whole discussion with Balak is, if you don't value me enough, you should know that I'm worth a lot, because with me you'll win, without me you'll lose. You know how much money you'd have to spend hiring someone else in order to succeed? Bilam,
his ultimate good is evil, right?
A Okay.
That's what he saw as good, but it was evil. I mean, there are three people there that had choices to make. Yeah? Three people in front of the king, and he said, I want you guys to curse these guys. First guy said, oh, man, I'm out of here. Second guy said, no, man. And the other said, I'll curse. Oh, yeah. And he said, he's like, he was fishing to do that, basically. Which maybe he thought that was good. He thought that one that feels good to do bad, it's good.
So that's one understanding. That's understanding the Yalkut Ma'am Loezer goes with. That Bilam really sold his soul to Azazel, to the angel that's in charge of Tumah. And that's Tumah. We know there were two angels that came down to this world. Both were sinful. Sham Chazai repented, and he remained hanging upside down between heaven and earth. And Azazel said, I'm going all the way. And Azazel became the angel who's representative of the forces of evil. And the Yalkut Ma'am Loezer goes with that Bilam wanted to connect with him, and he did the whole procedure. What?
But in his prophecy, here's what gets me though. In his ability to have whatever connection he had with Hashem, which is it must have been part of the fun health form, because he had some kind of access to ultimate good, and yet he chose evil. So it's one thing if a bad guy chooses evil, because he's going that direction. He's evil, he's going to be evil. But this bad guy had access to ultimate good. So he had to see the brightness of the light of the good in contrast to the darkness of his dark.
So on the one hand, we see him saying something along the lines of what you're saying. He said, "Oy mi yichye mi sumoked," and he said, "Tamot nafshi mot yesharim." We see that when he does connect to Hashem, he says, "I should go the way they do." But we also see that God's connection with Bilam is vayavo Elokim. God came just as God comes to Lavan and God comes to Avimelech. God's appearance to Bilam at first isn't the type of appearance that brings him up a notch. It's the type of appearance that God says, he's not fit for it, he didn't fix his traits, but I'll appear to him anyways, like I appear in dreams to all people who aren't deserving of it. Afterwards, God says, I want the Jews to get a higher level blessing, so God raises him a notch. There are two opinions in Chazal as to what Bilam did. The Medrash describes it as, was the Malach within him, or was the Malach a nail in his throat? It's Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And the question is, did Bilam say these blessings? Because the Torah later on refers to it as Vayafoch Hashem Elokecha et haklala livracha. God overturned the curse to a blessing. So the question is, was there a curse to be overturned? Or was it just that he wanted to curse and what came out was a blessing? That's the two understandings in Chazal. Was it that Bilam really was still connected to his tumah? He was pulling forth curses. And the Malach kept correcting it and saying, no, this is a blessing, this is it.
Bilam told Balak, he said, okay, I'll say what I'm going to say. And he said, my understanding of his blood probably is, he said, but whatever comes out of my mouth, I'm going to say. So I'm not kidding. He said, you know, whatever I'm going to say, I'm going to say.
So one understanding is that it went that way. And the other understanding is, so that's the two understandings in Chazal. Did Bilam say, I have no control, and the angel was forcing it out? Or whatever came out, was the angel really talking? Or was it that Bilam started a curse and the angel made an addition? Like he said they should be like a stream. He meant that they should ultimately dry out, like streams dry out. And the angel said they should be, the angel added on, a stream that never lacks water. Okay, each time, that's the two understandings in Chazal. Was it a complete control by an angel? Or was it that Bilam was cursing and God was altering it, making additions? Like an external nail in his throat that's like sending forth more words. But that he had power to say it. That he had power to curse and God made additions. Yeah, just like Mary was first. Yeah.
Maybe,
So I think
in his opinion, for him, he wants to destroy the Jews, so I find the best method.
I think that's a beautiful, beautiful thought, what you're saying, because I think that really personifies the errors that mankind makes. Often you're asked, I don't know, here in Israel, this is a question I was asked a lot on dates. With which figure in Tanakh do you most associate yourself with?
You did not say Bilam.
I didn't say Bilam, but I did say Yonah. Because I think that the mistake that Yonah made is a mistake that I find is the most common error. To think, you know, maybe I could do one better. And it's a way of justifying what's wrong. So you gave an excellent justification. Bilam says, I'm just for hire. They hired me to curse. I have to do the best possible job I could. Whenever we do something that's wrong, we have justification. The head, the warden in Sing Sing, he had under him hundreds of people who were on death row. And he was once asked, how many of them have remorse? And he said, almost none. You almost never find the person that these are the worst criminals. They almost never have remorse because they always have, Al Capone used to say, all I want to do is give people the finer pleasures in life and all I get for it is all of this bad rap. Two Guns Crowley was once in a car. He had murdered many police officers. And a policeman came. He saw his car standing by the side of the road. So a policeman came up to his car and he asked him what he's doing here. So he turned around, pulled out a gun, shot him. The policeman was lying on the floor, writhing in pain. He took out the policeman's gun, shot him again twice, and pulled off in his car. Finally, the police caught up with him in New York. And one afternoon, he's in an apartment. They surround his apartment. And for an hour, they're shooting into his apartment. They have machine guns mounted on buildings all around. And they're shooting into his apartment. And as he's bleeding to death, he writes a note. And on his note, he writes, inside this shirt, inside this man, lies a kind heart that would do no man any harm. That's how he's writing. This is a man who, a policeman just walked over to him and asked him, what are you doing here? And he shot him three times. So, did he view himself as bad? No. Most people don't view themselves as bad. Even when they're sinning, even when they're doing something wrong, people always have reasonings behind what they've done. When there was the great scandal in Wilson's time, what was his name? Taft. Taft was blamed for the scandal. There was a question of bidding for oil fields, and Taft was responsible for giving it to one person. He had a friend who had oil fields, so his friend was given the bid for a much higher price. And when the competitors complained, Taft sent in the Marines, and by gunpoint, they removed all the competitors from the site. So this hit the news, and it caused Wilson's government to go down. And Wilson blamed it on Taft. And Taft, when he heard it, he said, I don't know what I could have done different. He was a gentle person, and he couldn't understand. And years later, when Taft's wife heard a senator mention that it was her fault that Wilson's government went down. So it was the Teapot Dome scandal, it was called. So she got up and with a raging fist, she said, how dare anyone say my husband would be disloyal? He never did anything less than faithful. People never look at themselves and say, I've done something wrong. Bilam also had justification. But that's what I'm saying. We're always going to think, I'm doing what's good, I'm doing what's right. The question is, what are we looking at as good? The question is, what path do we choose to go down? Bilam initially was told no, but Bilam didn't want to hear the no. So God always makes it available for us to go down the path that we choose. God tells Jonah very clearly, Jonah, you go prophesy to the city of Nineveh. But Jonah doesn't want to go. So when Jonah's running away, God does a miracle, and the ship that's 2 days out at sea, God makes a wind and blows it back into port. And Jonah sees that and he says, boy, God must be happy with what I'm doing. Maybe this must be the right thing. So we always have ways of looking at what we're doing and justifying it and seeing the good in it. That's why I said, a person has to decide which good he's looking for. Bilam also must have had justification for what he's doing. The Medrash says that even a prowler, when he's about to break into a home, he raises his eyes to God and asks for success. He's about to steal one of the Ten Commandments, but he turns to God and says, God, bear with me. We all have this attitude of bear with me. So we have to be honest and search for a path that's really good. That's what the pasuk says. Kone lev, one who acquires a heart, one who acquires the knowledge of what's really supposed to be the way I'm supposed to live. So then Ohev Nafsho, he loves his soul. Shomel Tvuna, one who retains understanding, he's on his way, Limtzov Tov, to find true good. So that's what I was stressing. That's the question of what's true good. Everyone's going to claim I'm looking for good. I'm trying to be a good person. But that's not enough. The question is, what's true good? What should we be looking for? By the way, just to quote things in the name of the source, I don't read history books much. Right. I don't get around to it. The stories I quoted you are all from an excellent book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Yes. So he quotes all these stories. This is the only secular book that I do chazara on that I review. So I remember the stories by heart already. Yeah. No.
Anyway, I'm confused still about Bilam. It says on our path to attain Ruach HaKodesh, we have to follow 10 levels, and one leads to another. Watchfulness to zeal to this to that to this, and you think to yourself that you're going through the steps, and but this is mamash, like a really difficult thing, and you make the right choices at every step you're on. It's hard, and it takes diligence, and very few people make it. But at the end, you're rewarded with the Ruach HaKodesh and maybe prophecy at the end. But obviously, Bilam does not follow that train of thought, and he gets reward even when he does not follow those steps. He gets prophecy. And so one could say that he didn't follow those steps, but he gets the reward for not following those steps. And some would say, why? Because the goyim have to, when they're judged, have to say, you, where was our, you would have given us a prophecy. So is that the deal?
That seems to be one answer. There are other answers. We discussed last night. There are other potential answers, but Chazal do seem to approach Bilam as a tremendously negative person, even in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Bilam is an exemplary of a person who has who wants gashmius, who has pride, who has a bad eye.
It seems possible that he's using power from the other side too.
That's one understanding. Yeah, there are a few understandings. Yeah. The Gemara says that Bilam kosem ba'amato, his magic was through using his ama, his bris. Well, he didn't have a bris mila, but so what does that mean? That means that there was a way of using even that for negative. So let's do a little bit more. Yeah. I don't think when we discuss Tuma with reference to Bilam, we mean Tuma in the sense of Tuma and Tahara like we discuss in Parshas Chukas. A goy cannot be Mekabel Tuma, true. But there are forces of Tuma which a person can connect to in this world. And that Bilam chose to connect to. What does that mean? When God created the world, so God made it that a person can go in two directions in the world. Meaning status quo, person is born, he is basic, he is taho. Now beyond tara, a person can grow in kedusha, in holiness. And a person could go in the opposite direction, the direction of tuma. And God built into the world forces. And a person can tap into those forces. If a person works on perfecting his trait and becoming a good person, then a person can tap into the forces of kedusha, of holiness. So a person could be on a level where they walk in and they tell him, a kid just died outside. And he says, no, he didn't. And they tell him, how do you know? And he says, because I'm here, and that wouldn't have happened here. So he's on a level where he doesn't know everything that's going around him, but he could know certain things. A person could reach a level like Pinchas, where he could stand before people and they won't see him, because he's on a even higher level. At every level, a person can be on that level. A person can be on the level of a Kohen Gadol, where no one's going to kill someone by mistake if he's on the proper level. A person can be on a level of Shimon HaTzadik, where God won't make a rainbow shown throughout the decades that he's in power. Why? Because he's on a level that he causes everyone around him to be on a higher level. So he could attain levels of Kedusha, and they have a ripple effect, and they bring everyone around him to a higher level. By the same token, a person can go in the opposite direction. A person could go in the direction of Tumah. A person can destroy his soul, and a person can take every potential for Kedusha and use it for Tumah. Wherever there's potential for both directions. So Hashem said a man could go with his wife and attain the greatest Kedusha that's when the Shekhinah is between a husband and his wife. By the same token, Bilam can use it by going with his donkey and use it for the forces of Tumah. A person could use his mouth for Kedusha, for speaking Divrei Torah. A person could use his mouth for cursing, for going down the direction of Tumah. A person could speak in a vulgar fashion. A person could speak in a holy fashion. The greater the potential for holiness, by the same token God made it, the greater the potential for impurity, for Tumah. If we have in the land of Israel a greater potential, we could build a temple, a Beis HaMikdash. So in the land of Israel, there's a greater potential for Satan worship than anywhere else in the world. If you want to succeed, so to speak, in connecting with the devil, you want to succeed in becoming an impure person, you have a better chance here than anywhere else. The center for idol worship is Israel. It's the center for God's worship. But by the same token, it has the greatest potential for Tumah. The Gemara goes so far as to say that the non-Jews, the idol worshippers in Chutz Laaretz, are all fakers. They don't come close to the idol worshippers in Israel. Only here in Israel do we have real idol worship. Yeah, and when the temple was destroyed, so by the same token that the potential for holiness went down in the world, the potential for Tumah also went down in the world. We don't see Shadim roaming around here. We don't see people doing Trias Amazim roaming around here. Both potentials, et zelu matzasa elokim. God made the world with both potentials equal. So when we have greater revelations of Kedusha, so then there's also a potential for greater Tumah. When you have a Moshe, you have a Bilam. You don't have a Moshe, you don't have a Bilam. God made a balance in the world. So Bilam chose to tap into the strength of Tumah. We're holding Pasuk Yud. Lo nave lichsil tanuk. It is not fitting. It's not nice when we see a fool and he seems to be having the good life. We say, how did he get there? Very often you see people who inherited wealth and everyone looks at them and say, how did they get there? Just look at the headlines the last few days. Everyone was happy when that woman was... you guys don't see headlines. Okay. Kol hakavod. Af ki le'eved mishol v'sarim. Certainly, do people not like seeing when a servant is ruling over the Lord, the sarim. Sometimes we see tables turned, and that's one of the things that are bothersome. You want to make it good. But to retain a situation where he's ruling over his master, that's something that's not nice to see. Sometimes it's even worse. In the next few weeks, we're going to learn the Midrashim about the destruction. So one of the things that the Midrash quotes is that there was a man who was happily married, and there was someone else who wanted to take his wife from him, and he managed to get, let's say, Yaakov was married to Leah, and Reuven wants to take Yaakov's wife. So Reuven managed to make Yaakov lose his wealth. He got his wealth. He got his wife. And Yaakov ended up being a servant in Reuven's home. Reuven, who stole his wealth and stole his wife, Yaakov ends up being a servant crying in his home, and he sees how they're both living together, his husband and his wife, and he has to stand there and witness all of that. That's one of the great sins that the Gemara refers to that happened in Israel, that's representative of the moral decline in the country. That people could steal everything from one another. And you have a situation where a man could end up being... You steal the guy's wealth, you steal the guy's wife, But in the end, you also take him to be a servant in your home where he's witness to you enjoying all the things you stole from him. So the Gemara records that as one of the examples of the great thievery that was going on here and the great moral decline in the land of Israel. So when we see a servant that's master over his master, that's something that's also, you want to be wealthy, good. But when the tables are turned so far, then that's something that's unbecoming to look at. Sechad adam ha'aricha po. A man's wisdom causes him to have longer patience. V'tifalto avor al pasha. And last week we mentioned that there are two stages in a man's controlling his anger. That the pasuk is talking about two stages. One stage is someone hits you and you wait 2 days and then you come back and knock him out. So you have a man's wisdom causes him to have longer patience. V'tifalto, but the glory, the state that you're supposed to attain, is avor al pasha, where he has full control over his anger and he could forgo when someone else wronged him. So first we attain the first level, that someone wrongs us and we can wait and think it out and then decide, okay, now it makes sense, so we hit him back. But the second stage is where we can attain a level where we have full control and we could forego it. Okay, so we're going to pause here. We saw the beginning of the 19th chapter.